Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. Standing by to join us on the first half of the show is author, speaker, and mental health advocate Cohen Miles Rath, and he's here to share his memoir, Mending Reality: An Advocate's Existential Journey with Mental Health. Good morning. Thank you so much for calling in. So congratulations on your book. I want to ask this, and I ask this of a lot of authors, especially who write about their own personal struggles and the backstory. How does it feel to have this out in the world?
Well, I'd say it's one part very exciting because I know a lot of people might not have this type of opportunity, and I'm just thrilled to be an inspiration to many. And then the second part would be kind of nervous and kind of terrified because with memoir and sharing such an intimate experience of my life, there's always, the worry of how people might respond, putting myself in this vulnerable position. But I, do believe that I have a mission with it. I have a voice that I think could help a lot of people. And that's what really drives me to be in this position.
I think it's wonderful, and I feel that when people go through personal struggles of all different levels and magnitudes, writing it down, putting it out in the world, even if it doesn't feel at the time, can be really cathartic and healing and just help you move forward. Do you feel that?
I agree.
Do you feel like that a little bit?
Yeah, I think in the process of writing my memoir, it was cathartic for me. And my intention was really to, I always wanted to publish it, but, as I wrote more, I felt the healing aspect that it had on myself and my difficult journey that I've been on. So now to be able to put it out there, I think, elevates that to a point where I think, could help others.
Can you actually describe this journey with mental health to listeners?
Of course. So I can't talk about mental health, my mental health journey, without going all the way back to my childhood, really. I mean, I grew up with several ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and other risk factors such as poverty, parent separation, household dysfunction. And, as a mental health professional now, I know that risk factors increase the risk for future mental health challenges. And that kind of turned out to be true. However, I also had protective factors, such as a talent in sport. I had some privileges that I was fortunate to have that got me to college.
Okay.
I was the first student in my family, or first person in my family to go to college. And when I did, I had this huge pressure on me with my athletic career and my studies. And for a while, I was good. But then when I started to not meet the expectations I put on myself, I started to struggle and become very unwell. And then at one point, I was misusing substances to cope with my unwellness. My grades were dropping. I quit my athletic career. And then about a year after that, mental illness started to emerge unknowingly,
okay,
to the point where I really started to face a crisis.
Let me interject, Cohen. So when you say unknowingly, what were you seeing at the time?
Yep. So my early signs and symptoms of mental illness, and this was coming off my, already being really unwell, was some grandiosity. I was starting to feel different about the things that I was experiencing in the world. So one specific example, I remember watching the movie Inside Out at this time because it had come out.
Okay.
And I remember just looking at the cartoon characters in the film and how they're controlling the main character's mind. And I remember leaving that film and wondering, who's controlling me?
Mm.
Are there beings controlling my mind?
Mm-hmm.
And it was this bizarre thinking that just started to creep up and get worse over time.
And you didn't tell anybody?
It was tough for me even to grapple with.
Mm-hmm.
And I did kind of feel alone in it because no one had talked about mental health. I had no idea what bizarre type of thinking could occur and how that might relate to a symptom such as psychosis, which looking back now, I could, see that happening slowly.
Sure. Did you later find out, was anyone else in the family going through something similar? And was it also a genetic thing or just your own story?
You know, after the incident in which, during my mental health crisis, which was, in the months after I was experiencing symptoms, you know, there was kind of like I was in my recovery process, and it was kind of an unfolding of my family's history at that time, where I learned how my father had been diagnosed with bipolar in his life. There was some history of substance misuse with other family members, and, one of my sisters had a similar experience with psychosis to some mm-hmm. degree, but that didn't really all come out until after, because
wow.
there must have been the shame and stigma, right?
Sure,
and
yes.
just hiding of it all.
And even for you, was there a point where you thought, oh, I'm not going to talk about my history, my family, because of the stigma?
Yes, of course. When I initially, got out of jail due to that crisis and that incident, I didn't want to talk about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there was some news articles about me, so people could Google my name and find out these horrible articles about me that portrayed me as this monster.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like 7 of them. They were all local news.
Terrible.
And I actually, at some point, I felt obligated to start talking openly and publicly because I kind of feared some of the repercussions of those articles.
Of course.
For the rest of my life.
Yeah. But now you realize, I mean, the media, they spin things and it's clickbait and, it's horrible. And they don't know
yeah.
your true story. They're just regurgitating another story they heard and getting people to, look at their article.
Yeah. Yep, it's sensationalized, right? And,
mm-hmm.
During that time, I was also growing, I went and got my master's degree in social work, so I was growing my mental health career, getting into the field of mental health advocacy, and I just kind of all pieced together where I was like, you know what? I can share my story not just for, my own reputation, but also to inspire and,
mm-hmm.
Promote mental health change.
Yes. Well, also, what I feel is very powerful about your story, Cohen, is that you talk about, and I think I saw an interview you did with someone else, you talk about not having purpose and meaning early on, maybe it was college, and we are in a mental health crisis, or what I call a mental health pandemic, and it was exacerbated by COVID. So do you, and this generation, Gen Z, is experiencing a loneliness epidemic. Do you think that for younger people, if they do have purpose and meaning early on, that can help them in various ways?
Yeah, purpose and meaning for me in terms of my recovery was such a key component. And prior to, really starting to embrace my recovery in college, I had purpose and meaning with my athletic career.
Mm-hmm.
But when that kind of fell through and then I lost that, that was just a sign of unwellness. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And I imagine a lot of young people, especially with COVID happening,
mm-hmm.
Just that increases their potential difficulty with purpose. And especially at that time of their transition into an adulthood, right? That's such a difficult time. I know, when I lost that purpose and meaning is when I started to become a lot more unwell, and that just added another challenge to my illness that was kind of brewing.
Sure. So tell me about life now. You got your master's and you are a mental health advocate. Tell me about the journey up till now.
Mm-hmm. So really, when I got out of jail, I had a tremendous amount of support. My mom let me move in with her. My first year out of jail was completely focused on rehabilitation. I was seeing a therapist, a nurse practitioner, a substance use therapist, a counselor. And my whole mind with mental health completely changed. And I was very privileged to have access to really good resources and a loving family who did everything they can to to support me, so much so that, you know, I was able to actually go get my master's in social work and actually start learning about mental health from the clinical and systemic approaches. So, I mean, I just feel very fortunate to be able to utilize my lived experience in my professional career, too. You know, I spent 5 years at the Mental Health Association in New York State. Now I'm at the Office of Mental Health in New York State, where I work on suicide prevention specifically.
That's great.
And I'm always intertwining my lived experience in my work because, you know, people recognize the difference that that can make, and it helps me to overcome the challenges simultaneously.
Yes.
So it's a win-win situation.
It is. And for you to be out there as a mental health advocate sharing your story is so powerful because you don't know how you opening up will change the trajectory of someone's life, especially a young person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do have a good example with that. I was actually at a youth summit probably a month and a half ago where I shared my story to an audience of 400 high schoolers and, you know, school communities and families. And I had, you know, one particular, parents and their daughter come up to me and express, you know, the difficulties that child had been going through, mm-hmm. In relation to some of my specific experiences with psychosis. And, you know, they felt heard, they felt listened, and I, you know, was able to share some additional insight with them. But I think, you know, that showed how I made a difference with that child and that family. And that's what makes my work so meaningful, is when I could hear that type of feedback and hear that type of, and open that conversation in the first place, right? Were they able to, willing to open up to me?
Yes, because people sit in shame and they sit in secret and they suffer in silence. And I've said to people, I gave a talk a couple months ago and I was saying to parents, just because your kid is a 4.6 and they're, you know, on the varsity, whatever, doesn't mean their mental health is a 4.6. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are so many examples of people that were suffering that we thought, oh, they were fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I could be that difference where that child or that student might open up because they heard something, like, that is one of the first steps that I think, you know, can help everyone approach mental health in a better way and at least start that process and that conversation.
That's wonderful. What do you think needs to happen in order to change the mindset of zero stigma about talking about mental health? I mean, because May, we're approaching Mental Health Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is, I have probably a lot of ideas and a lot of thoughts with that, but I'll focus on one, which is the importance of mental health education. I know when I got my first job out of grad school, I was hired under this project called the School Mental Health Resource and Training Center that was implemented in New York State to help support the mental health education law, which requires New York State K-12 schools to provide mental health education. First state to do it. I think other states are following. But that's one policy change that could happen today in every state school system, education system, that could start those conversations in the early years of childhood and throughout high school. And, you know, mental health education, it's also about, you know, understanding what mental illness is, understanding what protective factors can be done. Mm-hmm. Like, all that knowledge could really help students who might face difficulty understand more about what that is and where to go get help. And that, to me, is a very key part to reducing that shame, stigma, and opening that conversation alongside all the awareness that happens all the time with mental health. I see it all the time. Which, you know, thankfully, COVID, that was one positive thing from COVID, was this opening of the conversation with mental health. And
yes.
I think, you know, a specific change like a policy would solidify it.
Definitely. And it's interesting, I was working on a book of my own, but when I was looking up the different policies, which I knew nothing about, it was so interesting to see the process of how policies are adopted. And so you have, you know, this idea, and then people vote on it and then they go on vacation and and then nothing happens. And it's a wonderful idea. And so there are so many of these where it goes to the House and then nothing happens. And and I thought, where's the urgency? There needs to be urgency, especially post-COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, and even when a policy gets passed, such as mental health education, you need constant, like, refinements and push for it to ensure that, you know, that policy is actually being implemented if it's being effective or not, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of ways that that can be done.
Well, think about it, Cohen, about the power of a Super Bowl commercial, right? To sway us, to make us feel, to make us buy. And I feel that we need powerful campaigns everywhere, you know, every place where people are out, whether it's on a bus, a train, wherever, to promote mental health advocacy, conversations, ending stigma. And it needs to be this entire campaign. Now, maybe that's a huge dream, but that is a big thought of mine.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, there's in my field of work, I've seen a lot of different organizations, mental health nonprofits doing that type of work. And it is tough to, you know, scale it large and keep on the message, too, because mental health is a complex issue. Mental illness, you know, hospitalization, there's so many systems involved. And sometimes there could be mixed messaging, right? So it is, for me, in my view, it's a, you know, there's a balance act, and there's also just, you know, trying to scale it is a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, for students here at UC Irvine listening to this and who are struggling with their mental health or feeling disconnected and overwhelmed, how can they try to mend their reality? What suggestions would you make for them?
Well, if they are in a position where they're recognizing the difficulties that they're going through and understanding how might that be impacting them, like what is the stressors in their life and how is it impacting their day-to-day in themselves or their friends or their family, when is the most important part, when might they need to reach out for help, right? If their stressors become super overwhelming to where it's influencing their day-to-day behavior, responsibilities, relationships, if it's becoming overwhelming and those things are significantly being impacted, it may be time to reach out for help. And where do you go for that, right?
Sure.
Well, someone who you trust, right? And that maybe that's a friend, maybe that's a family member, maybe that's reaching out to a counselor if you have no one, or looking up a resource that, you know, could help you. So yeah, I definitely think that the awareness piece is so key. And then those management techniques, such as connecting with someone for help when you're going through overwhelming situations, is very, very important to start that conversation and to take action with your mental health right away, so that way it doesn't get to a point where it's building towards a crisis, right? Or something even, you know, worse.
Yes. Anything else you'd like listeners to know about your book?
Well, I think I really strive to inspire people in my book. I went through a very, very difficult situation and went through, you know, some significant experiences with mental illness and even on wellness. And there's such a multifaceted approach to mental health that I like to take. But one thing that is really, really key, and I say this often, is that recovery and support is not only possible, but it's probable in the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. And we all have a role in helping to create those circumstances.
That's great. One thing I didn't ask you about is, what is life like now? Do you have a whole new way of approaching situations? Like, let's say you're struggling with something, you have like this mental health toolkit?
Yeah, so I definitely 100% approach it completely different than I did before my crisis and my incarceration. And I've worked a lot at managing certain symptoms. It's been a yearly practice of mine for many years to where I'm able to identify certain symptoms and kind of manage them. That's just a constant for me, right? But one key thing is if I ever start to become overwhelmed, I reach out for support. And I have people who I know and I trust and I love that I connect with immediately if I'm getting to that point. Because, you know, I remember that mental illness can wax and wane, and it can return with cunning force. And that goes along with unwellness as well. So I'm always in tune with, or trying my best to be in tune with my mental health so that way I could take care of myself on a regular basis. And it's not always easy.
No.
Not always easy.
Not at all. Well, are you on a book tour right now? Are you doing...
Not yet.
Okay, not yet.
Hopefully. So
okay.
When my book comes out, I'm planning some local book tours in my area.
Okay. And the official launch for the book is?
July 22nd, 2025.
Okay. Well, it's very exciting. And I know that it's going to really resonate with people of all ages.
Yes. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Where can people find out more about you?
So they could visit my website at CohenMilesRath.com, and all my information is there. People could reach out to me, contact me, and check out more about my book and my story. That is CohenMilesRath.com.
Fantastic. And for listeners, you can also visit the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And I put Cohen's information book cover on there as well, and a link where you can find out more about his book and a link to his website, CohenMilesRath.com. I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Janine.
This has been a pleasure. And again, I wish you all the best. This is a very important book to get out there, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Be well. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Take care. If you missed any part of my conversation with Cohen Miles Rath, the author of Mending Reality, An Advocate's Existential Journey with Mental Health, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. And if you want to find out more about KUCI, you can head over to our website, kuci.org, or even our socials at KUCI-FM. We're going to take a little break, and then at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be speaking with journalist Haley Krischer about her new psychological thriller, You Belong to Me. You're going to want to stick around for this one. This is a really great read as well. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.